Nishkamam Nishkriyam Shantam Niravadyam Niranjanam Amitasya Param Setum Dagde Nanam Ivanalam.
Materially, he has no parts and is inactive and inert, like a fire whose fuel is depleted. He is the irreproachable, faultless rampart of immortality. So this is a negative description of the Supreme Person. The impersonalists might like to focus on such a description because it says that the Supreme has no parts, does nothing, is untouched by anything material. This is very congenial to the Mayavadi idea that all form, all anything with qualities is imperfect. Even God, even Krishna, the personality of Godhead, Narayana, is a product of illusion, according to the Mayavadis. That's why we call them Mayavadis, it is a derogative term. Not because they say that this world is under the control of Maya. We say that also. So that's not what distinguishes them as Mayavadis. But they're saying that Krishna is also Maya. When the Absolute becomes covered by illusion, all of the Absolute, not just a small spark like the Jiva, but when the total Absolute becomes covered by illusion and the mode of ignorance, that's Ishvara, that's the personality of God. Because the personality of God has a form, he has name, he has activities, therefore he must also be illusion. He's just complete illusion, a big illusion, compared to the Jiva, who's a very small illusion. He's the controller. He's free from the control of others. He's apparently perfect. He's an object of worship. But as far as the Mayavadis are concerned, this Saguna Brahman, this supreme with form, is illusion. He's imperfect. So when this verse is just saying that the supreme, proper, has no parts, has no activities, is untouched by anything material, this seems to support that Mayavadi idea. But only if you take it out of context. Having read this whole Upanishad, we know that the personality of the Supreme is affirmed. His qualities are affirmed. He's described as being the knower, the controller, the creator. Not that the creation is done by some inferior being. Not that every person that has a name and a form is illusion. The Absolute Truth is being presented in this Upanishad as the Supreme Truth, as the Absolute Reality. That Absolute Reality is a person, and he's the creator and the controller and the destroyer of this world. So, we have to look at a verse like this in context then. It has to fit in with the rest of the argument, the rest of what is being said in this Upanishad. If it says he has no activity and he's inert, but we've been saying so many times that one of his activities is to create the universe, that's quite an active thing to do, create a whole universe. So how can you be totally inactive and be creating universes at the same time and maintaining them and sitting in the heart of every living entity, giving them intelligence? So we have to understand this in proper context. It must mean that he has no material parts. He has no material activity. He's inert in the material sense because he doesn't involve himself in any material business. He's irreproachable, yes. But it doesn't mean he's nothing. It doesn't mean he's literally inactive. He has his spiritual activities, but they're not known to the materialists. And they have nothing to do with material realm. He's devoid of all faults that could be criticized. This is avad. Vad means to speak. Avadya is idiomatic expression in Sanskrit. It means avadya means what can be spoken of badly, criticized. What is subject to criticism is called avadya. And niravadya is what cannot be criticized, what is beyond reproach. No one could find anything wrong to say anything bad about the Supreme Person. Of course, some have tried, like Shishupal. He got the special benediction. He could insult Krishna 101 times. And he freely used that benediction. At the Rajasuya sacrifice, he used it the 98th, 99th, 100th, 101st time, and tried one more time and got his head chopped off. And Vishnu Chakravarti, as we heard in class, I think today or yesterday, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explained all the insults of Krishna as actually glorification, unintentional glorification. All the things that Shishupal tried to say about Krishna that were supposed to be insults were actually adding to his glory. He has no caste. No one knows what community he belongs to. So that, ordinarily that's an insult, but talking about Krishna is a glorification. And so many other things he said about Krishna. Because Krishna is niravadya. The Supreme Person is niravadya. Nobody can actually say anything bad about him. He's not subject to criticism. Okay. So go on to verse 20.
Yada charma varakasham veshtayanti manava tada devam avigyaya dukasyanto bhavishyati.
Only after ordinary men have rolled up the sky like a carpet can unhappiness be brought to an end without knowing this, knowing the effulgent Lord. In other words, nobody will ever become free from unhappiness unless he does know the effulgent Lord. Because this is just an ironic statement. When ordinary men have rolled the sky up like a carpet, that will never happen. Much power. The sky is all pervading. No human being can take the sky and roll it up. Similarly, without knowledge of the Paramatma, the Supreme Person, liberation is not possible. Not by simply practicing Ashtanga Yoga or any other process without proper tattva gyan. This proper philosophical understanding of the Absolute Truth is necessary. It's not even enough to have some religious sentiment. There must be proper knowledge received from those who actually know. It must be realized knowledge. And the only way the student has any hope of realizing it is if his teacher is realized. We get our spiritual knowledge from parampara. It's effective for that reason. Without such tattva gyan, liberation is not possible. As stated in the Upanishads, na pragyaya na prajaya danena tyagena aikena amritatvama nashnu. Anashu. Nobody has ever achieved immortality by mere use of his own intelligence, by begetting religious offspring, by giving wealth and charity, by various kinds of renunciation. None of these processes in themselves has earned anybody liberation ever. Not without transcendental knowledge and devotion. Of course, the major theme of this book has been yajñātvā mṛtyupāśaṁ cinati, or jñātvā deva mucyate sarvapāśaya. Knowing the Supreme Person, one becomes free from death. by knowing the Supreme Person. That idea of the Supreme Person is repeated over and over again. The Absolute Truth is God, the Supreme Person. And knowledge of Him is what frees one. But that knowledge is explained as devotional service. It's not revealed in this Upanishad in its higher aspects. The ecstasy of prema bhakti, the different individual personal relationships, rasas, that one can have with Krishna, that is not elucidated here. But the basic principles of devotion, of self-surrender, of acknowledgement of the Lord's greatness, and of considering oneself His servant, this is explained here. At least the entrance into devotional service is very clearly presented. And we'll see how it gets the summary here in the last few verses, that this is the final conclusion, that the essence of this process, although we call it knowledge, the essence of that knowledge is devotion. Because it has to be a special kind of knowledge. Okay, we'll go on to the next verse. Tapat pravavad deva prasadat cha brahmaha shvetashvatarota vidvan atyashramibhyat paramam pavitram provachasam yad rishi sangha jushtam. On the strength of his austere discipline, and by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, the wise Shvetashvatara aptly described to the assembled sannyasis the absolute truth whom countless sages worship. So here at the end, the author is named, is mentioned, Shvetashvatara Rishi. We don't hear about him specifically until this verse at the very end. We're told his qualifications, two qualifications. On the strength of his austere discipline, his tapas, and by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, he was empowered to be the speaker of this Upanishad. And the audience is described here as the members of the sannyas ashram. And the object of that knowledge is mentioned again, the paramam pavitram, the supreme pure, absolute truth. Who is worshipped by all the great sages like Prahlad, Sanat Kumara, and so on? Narada, these such great sages worship this supreme person. There are different specific successions of knowledge. In the Bhagavatam, we primarily hear about the great kings in the two dynasties, the Sun Dynasty and the Moon Dynasty. And we hear about the great devotees who were members of these dynasties. And we read about their pastimes and how they some of them became perfect and went back to Godhead. The Bhagavatam is meant for a very broad audience. And so it tries to present its lessons in an entertaining fashion. There are stories, interesting stories, about interesting people. But saintly kings are not the only Vaishnavas. There are many great sages like Narada, Sanat Kumar, Prahlad. Well, Prahlad's a king. But there are many great sages, Brahmins, who are also devotees of the Lord. But their life stories are not necessarily externally so interesting. Just to read about how so-and-so sage, you know, sat in a cave and meditated for 50,000 years and went back to Godhead is not necessarily a very interesting story. If the sage, something happens to him, you know, some young girl comes and pokes his eye with a cane and then he marries her and this and that, we hear about Chavana Rishi. You know, then the Rishi story is interesting, but just ordinary life of a Rishi is not such entertaining reading. So we hear in the Bhagavatam mostly about the kings and about some sages who had very unusual things happen to them, not the ordinary sages. But here, in this context of the Upanishad, the audience is primarily sannyasis and sages. It's not what makes for very entertaining reading, but these are certainly great devotees of the Lord. Verse 22.
Vedante paramam guyam purakalpe prachoritam na prashantaya datavyam na putraya shishyaya vapuraha.
This is the most confidential of the Vedanta Upanishads, spoken in a previous day of Brahma. It should not be given to one who is not peaceful, or to one who is not a son or a disciple. Okay, the commentary says, because this Upanishad is very confidential, it should only be taught to a peaceful son or a disciple. This truth about the Supreme Person, Bhagavat Tattva, is there in all the Upanishads, but it's hidden. It only becomes revealed through the mercy of a spiritual master, and the spiritual master is free to fully reveal it only to a sincere disciple. A person whose faith, a person who doesn't have real faith and who can't control his senses, if that kind of person hears such intimate knowledge, it will only increase his inclination to sense gratification. He'll misuse it. He'll misunderstand it and misuse it. Krishna says in the Gita, Shradhavan Labhate Gyanam. It's the faithful person who obtains real knowledge. So a candidate for hearing this knowledge, he should first have his heart purified by performing his duties, his Vedic duties. Generally, a son or a disciple inherits the character of his father or his guru. So that's a general principle here. One should be a faithful son or a faithful disciple before hearing this. And if a son or a disciple is not qualified, if he's not, if he's undisciplined, if his heart is not peaceful, then he's not qualified to hear. So we don't emphasize, although in ancient times, the specific succession of the rishis, those who heard the original Vedas and passed them on from generation to generation, usually it was the son of the rishi who became the next rishi. And things were passed down in a seminal descent, generally. But that was a previous age, or previous ages, Satyayuga, Tretayuga, when the social order was properly functioning, when a Brahmin was really a Brahmin, and a Rishi's son was usually very qualified. Nowadays in Kali Yuga, this seminal disciplic succession is rejected. The principle is not functioning properly. We see some of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, some of the followers of the Goswamis of Vrindavan, because the six Goswamis and others, they were concerned that the deity worship go on perpetually. So they gave the deity worship to household families and said that the worship of the deity, like Radharaman and so on, should remain in this particular family forever. But from that evolved the misapplication of the principle, the caste Goswami system, that although they were asked to take care of the deity, they took it upon themselves, these families, to declare themselves the Acharyas by right of this seminal descent, and to call themselves Goswamis. We visited one Goswami and his son in one of the major temples of Vrindavan. And I asked the older Goswami, you always initiate your own son as the next Acharya, but what if the son is not qualified? What if he's not fit? And he says, no, we always, no matter what the son is, he always gets initiated. It always strictly passes through the family line. There's no discrimination, qualified or not qualified. No, all the sons get initiated. They split up the duties. You know, they take turns worshiping the deity among several families. He told me the only way a son can get disqualified if he marries outside, you know, someone of a lower class. There's an improper marriage, then he's ostracized completely. Not even allowed to come inside the temple. But that's not the principle taught here. Although it said, you know, one should teach this to a son or a disciple. They mean a qualified son, a qualified disciple. Okay, last verse.
Yasya deve parabhaktir yata deve tata gurao tasya ite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanaha prakashante mahatmanaha.
For that person of broad intelligence who has transcendental devotion to the Supreme Lord and equal devotion to his spiritual master, the purport of everything discussed here becomes revealed. So this is the final statement. The last line is repeated for emphasis and to underline that this is the end. It's a fortunate person who has parabhakti, unconditional devotion for Lord Hari. Not just devotion, not just some sort of devotion, third class, fourth class, but unqualified, unconditional devotion, parabhakti. This is what Rupa Goswami discusses in his textbook on devotional service, Shri Bhaktivinoda Sindhu. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanamritam anukulini krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama bhakti, or parabhakti, transcendental devotional service, has special qualifications. It is devoid of ulterior motives. It is unalloyed, unconditional. It's not predominated by the motives of acquiring knowledge or gaining some material success, jnana or karma. There may be in the devotee who's gradually advancing some karmic tendency, some jnanic tendency. But in the process of pure devotional service, these must be kept subordinate. They can be dovetailed, but they should never be allowed to predominate. The desire for knowledge or the desire to achieve something in this world. You can achieve something and then give it all to Krishna. You can develop knowledge for Krishna. But under the guidance of a pure devotee, one must keep his material tendencies under strict control. The spiritual master will tell you what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. But following the process of pure devotional service taught by Rupa Goswami, by a perfect representative of Rupa Goswami, one can adhere to this higher principle of parabhakti, of not letting one's devotion be predominated by motive of karma or jnana. Anukuli, Krishna Dudashilana. Krishna Anushilana, practicing how to satisfy Krishna in a favorable way, in a way that Krishna wants, offering Krishna what he wants, not just something that we want and then giving it to Krishna as an afterthought. That's pure devotional service, parabhakti. That is what is being referred to here. One who has parabhakti, unconditional devotion for the Supreme Person, and has the same kind of unconditional devotion for his spiritual master who is the representative of Krishna. That is the person who can properly understand the message of this Upanishad. Although it is being presented to an audience of jnanis, of sannyasis, who have some material, some impersonal tendency
They're interested in liberation. They can hear this Upanishad, but they will only fully realize it when they come to a higher level and they develop their devotion to God and their faith in the Vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord. So the Upanishad is meant, the word Upanishad means sitting next to the spiritual master or coming closer. You know, rather than sitting in the back of the audience, coming and sitting next to the spiritual master. It means approaching the truth closer. You may start off as an impersonalist, as a jnani, but the Upanishad is meant to teach you how to become a devotee. Bring you closer to the truth. So I think the book successfully and in a coherent way achieves that purpose. I don't know if it would satisfy Narada Muni, you know, who was criticizing Vyasadeva for not openly, explicitly glorifying the Supreme Person and his activities. That has not been done here. But this book is effective for, especially for people who are inclined toward, who want liberation and want to practice knowledge for the achievement of liberation, want to develop spiritual knowledge. For them, this book helps point them in the direction of devotional service. In general, the Vedas, the word means knowledge. And real knowledge, as this book, as the Shvetashvatara Upanishad emphasizes, real knowledge is devotion. So the purpose of all the Vedas is to bring people to the Supreme Person, to his devotional service. If not directly, at least indirectly, gradually. That's why Krishna can claim in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaischa sarvair ahameva vedya. By all the Vedas I am to be known, Krishna says in the Gita. Only a few texts like the Bhagavatam explicitly glorify Krishna. But all the Vedic literatures are meant to gradually reveal Krishna to various people according to how they're prepared to accept him. A person who wants liberation is generally not ready to surrender to the Supreme Person. It's like a person who has strong motive for material enjoyment. He's only interested in God if God can help him with his material enjoyment. The materialist, they'll go to church on Sunday so that all the other people in the community can see. He is an outstanding member of the community. He goes to church. And it's good for his business and good for his reputation to show up on church on Sunday. And then he may give a little bit of attention to God besides being there so everyone can see him. And he may pray to God, please give me my daily bread. Please increase my business. It's not that the Hindus are free from this kind of hypocrisy. Every shopkeeper is waving a stick of incense at their shop deity in the morning just for good business. So that's a weak kind of devotion. Similarly, the jnanis, who are very strongly attached to liberation, they're not interested in some cheap material profit. They want something selfish for themselves. They want to get out of this cycle of birth and death. And they have use of God if God will help them get that. They're also exploiting God for their own purposes. So the purpose of the Vedic literature is to take people like that, who have no use for God unless God can help them get what they want, and to dovetail these materialistic propensities so that people can develop true understanding of the Supreme Person and actual devotion, pure devotion. That's why Narada condemned Vyasadeva, that he hadn't presented a complete program of devotional service. He told him, Naishkaramim achyuta bhava varjitam, the shogun. Just the science of renunciation, of refraining from work, is not very attractive. It doesn't have any transcendental quality to it if it doesn't involve love for Lord Achyuta. Niranjanam Gyanam, or dry knowledge of the Supreme, just theoretical knowledge of the Supreme, without any sense of attraction to his personal qualities, will give no satisfaction to the soul. What to speak then of ordinary materialistic activities for mundane profit? That certainly won't give anybody satisfaction. So the only reason to encourage these propensities of karma and jnana is to regulate them and turn them in the right direction. The tendency is always going to be there to want to enjoy things in this world. Almost everybody wants to enjoy mundane sense gratification. So most people have to be allowed to indulge in the endeavors for sense gratification, but by Vedic sacrifice, they're purified and they're turned in the direction of worship of the Lord. Similarly, the Gyanis, they want their annihilation, they want their liberation. So they have to be allowed to pursue that goal. Otherwise they'll be frustrated and rebel. So okay, you can have your liberation, but understand who it is who can give liberation. You have to go to him to get your liberation. In that way, the Gyanis are gradually trained up in the direction of devotion. And that aim is there in all the Upanishads, but in this one Upanishad and a few others, it's more explicit. This Upanishad is fairly explicit about the emphasis of personal surrender, personal understanding and surrender to the Supreme Person. Therefore, it has some similarities with the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. There are some verses that are almost the same, one verse at least that is exactly the same as the verse in the Bhagavad Gita. A few others that are very similar, and many similar themes. And we didn't have time in the course to read all these quotations, but there are many statements from Srimad Bhagavatam that run parallel to ideas in this Upanishad. And Srila Prabhupada wanted that we should publish books like this. He wanted all the Upanishads, all the Puranas, to be published by ISKCON, BBT, so that we can tell the world we don't just have one Bible or one Koran. We have thousands of books. Here it is. Here's the whole, our whole library. Show the whole shelf. So this knowledge should be presented, if for no other reason than to impress the world that we have a very vast literature, scientific literature. The Vedas are a desire tree. There's something, just like a desire tree provides whatever anybody wants. Similarly, the Vedic literature has something for everybody. The materialists can find out how to succeed in their material activities, and the philosophers can find all the philosophy they want, especially in the Upanishads. Yes, to some on some level, yes. Yeah, the way I understand it, he's not necessarily a pure devotee. At least what he's teaching is not pure devotion. He's teaching a version of devotional service that's mixed with desire for liberation. Pure devotional service rejects the motive of liberation. The Bhagavatam rejects that at the very beginning. This Upanishad does not. There's two possible reasons for that. Either the author was not on a higher level himself, or if he was a purer devotee than that, he was carefully considering his audience and not trying to push them too far. And we can't really judge. In many cases, in various Vedic literatures, there's a compromise made for a certain audience. We can never really be sure whether the author, that's the level of the author, or whether he's on a higher level and is just adjusting for his audience. See, this is what is unique about the Bhagavatam, is that there is no compromise. Yeah. This is for the Paramahamsas. If you're not a Paramahamsa, when you're finished with this Bhagavatam, you'll be a Paramahamsa. And we won't compromise with you. Sarva dharma parityaja mami kam sharanam raja. You give up all your ideas, what you think religion is, including your idea of liberation, and just surrender to me, be my devotee. And that'll be your liberation. That is the ultimate message of Bhagavad Gita. The Sri Vaishnavas, they teach Vamanujacharya, or before him, Yamunacharya, taught what was called the Rahasya Triumph, three secrets, three secret mantras. Originally, these mantras were meant to be kept secret, but the secret got out after a few generations. The secret mantras are simply, there's two mantras addressed to Lord Narayan. One mantra, short mantra to Lord Narayan, another mantra to Narayan and Lakshmi together. And the third mantra, secret mantra, is actually this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, the Uttama Shloka, the ultimate statement of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Padichaja. That's the third secret mantra. So they didn't stay secret very long. After about two generations, already people are writing commentaries on the secret mantras, and everybody knows them nowadays. But this one statement of the Bhagavad Gita is considered the ultimate word of the Bhagavad Gita, the final word on liberation of everything. And then also in chapter 10, verses 8 through 11 are considered the essence of the Gita also, so there's a few verses that are considered the essence. But this statement is the last, it's at the very end, it's the final summary, 1861. So we can take this last verse of the Shvetashvatara Upanishad to similarly be the final statement that one who has unconditional devotion for the Supreme Person and equal unconditional devotion for his spiritual master, to him, all the essential knowledge of the Upanishads will be. Yes, he said it's appropriate for us to want to go back to Godhead. That's liberation. Lord Chaitanya says, I don't care. Let me take birth again and again, but I have to have pure devotion. So Prabhupada says, tells us not to imitate that. And instead, it's appropriate for us to want to get out of this material world. And then, when we come to a higher stage of realization, and we actually attain love of God, then we can decry the idea of liberation. But for now, that we have both feet stuck in the mud, we should try to get out of the mud. It's, the actual leaving this world is not important. Once we attain pure devotion, it doesn't matter where we go. Then, for a Paramahamsa, pure devotee, there is no distinction, material world, spiritual world. Jnana Mishra Bhakti, and what that means is there's some motive, some desire for liberation there, and that's what's motivating the practitioner. Yes, but I'm approaching him with a motive. Yes, it's very proper that you should approach the Supreme Person. We can call that devotion, but you're asking for something you shouldn't have to ask the Supreme Person for. It. Pure devotee doesn't ask for liberation. Okay?
So that indicates that it's just that.
Yeah, you can take, since he is speaking about himself there, yes. Unless he's just being humble and trying to present him as himself in the same category with the other sages. It doesn't matter, we don't even know who he is and when he lived. How many millions of years ago? We don't even have any idea. Okay, we can stop here. So tomorrow there'll be a short quiz. Don't worry about it.
Even if you get some answers wrong, don't worry, I'll grade it liberally. And you should also turn your paper in tomorrow. I'd like to thank everybody else, everybody for their patience and perseverance. I tried to make this presentable. It's not easy. It's a very technical work. Okay. I'll try it again some other time. Let's see if I can do a better job next time. Okay, thank you. All glory to you.